Second case of the day, Supreme Laundry Service v. Hartford Casualty.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stephen Gorman. I represent Supreme Laundry, the appellant in this case. Your Honors, this is a case that was removed from the Circuit Court of Cook County. The underlying issue here is the duty of an insurance company to defend its insurer. The facts are pretty well set forth in the briefs, but very summarily stated, my client filed a lawsuit in the Circuit Court of Cook County seeking a declaratory judgment that it was entitled to possess and occupy certain laundry rooms in a condominium complex out in Hinsdale. In the course of that lawsuit, a competitor who claimed to have an interest in those same laundry rooms filed a counterclaim against my client. My client tendered that counterclaim for defense to the Hartford Insurance Company, which had contemporaneously issued two insurance policies, a general commercial liability policy and an umbrella policy. Hartford refused to defend the claim, and over a period of time articulated that its reason for doing that was because my client did not own or was not the landlord or lessor of the laundry rooms. The underlying litigation was ultimately settled, and we filed on behalf of Supreme a breach of contract case in the Circuit Court of Cook County seeking to recover our damages, mainly our attorney's fees, spent in the underlying case. In the course of that was the case that was then removed to the district court. We then filed a motion for judgment on the pleadings and addressed in that motion what we believed to have been the reason why Hartford had denied any duty to defend, namely that our client didn't own these laundry rooms and wasn't the lessor. Hartford then filed a cross motion for judgment on the pleadings, in which for the very first time Hartford abandoned literally all of the other reasons that it had ever articulated for refusing to provide us a defense, and said that you are not entitled to a defense because the party that brought the counterclaim against you, CoinMac Inc., a Delaware corporation, is a corporate entity, and the coverage provided under the wrongful eviction offense, as defined in both the commercial general liability policy and I think under the umbrella policy, is limited to a natural person. The main reliance the only case that they cited to support that proposition was a California case decided in the Ninth Circuit in 2005, which was over 3.5 years after we had tendered the defense of the claim to Hartford. The district court, the California court, did an analysis of the commercial general liability policy at issue there and saw and determined that the various uses of the word person and the word organization, both in isolation and in combination, led it to the conclusion that the only people or the only entity, the only claim that would be covered under the wrongful eviction provision would be one brought by a natural person. No case in Illinois had ever held that, and that was acknowledged both by the district court and by Hartford. Hartford also raised another defense, namely that the counterclaim filed by CoinMac arose out of a breach of contract, which I'll address in rebuttal. Here's the issue. At the time that the tender of the defense was made to Hartford in March of 2002, this California case, Miripad versus the California Insurance Guarantee Agency, had not been decided. No case had ever held or had ever construed a commercial general liability policy of the nature at issue here to provide coverage for a wrongful eviction claim only if that claim was brought by a natural person and not by a corporation. It is clear under Illinois law that the time from which one determines whether there is an obligation to defend is at the time of tender. And at the time of tender, there was, in our view, a potential that the CoinMac counterclaim was covered under either the general commercial liability policy or under the umbrella policy. In their papers to this court, Hartford says, well, the California decision in 2005, albeit 3.5 years after the tender of the defense was made, is not new law. And it's not new law because the California court applied what are general rules of contract construction in arriving at its conclusion that the policy and the coverage provided for wrongful eviction would only extend the claims of natural persons. In Illinois, the duty to defend, first of all, the California case is not precedent in Illinois. Other than the district court citation to it, it's not cited by any other Illinois court. It seems to be the law in California. We think the most instructive case here is the Illinois Supreme Court's opinion in the Midwest Sports Authority case. In that case, the city of Chicago filed an action against various gun dealers, claiming that the gun dealers were perpetrating a public nuisance by selling guns to people and which were subsequently used to commit crimes. Midwest Sporting Goods tendered that defense to its insurance carrier. Its insurance carrier, as is required by Illinois law, defended the case under a reservation of rights and sought a declaratory judgment that it had no duty to defend, that there was no coverage under its policy. The trial court and the appellate court agreed with the insurance company. The insurance company then went back to the trial court and said, we're now entitled to our fees because it's been determined that we never had any duty to defend. The appellate court agreed. But the Illinois Supreme Court said, no, that's not right. And the key language in that opinion, and we quote it in our brief, is as follows. Gainsco maintains that because it had no duty to defend, it follows that there is no contract governing the relationship between the parties. The problem with this argument is that Gainsco is attempting to define its duty to defend based upon the outcome of the declaratory judgment action. Although the insurer's duty to indemnify arises only after damages are fixed, the duty to defend arises as soon as damages are sought. In our case, damages were sought in March of 2002. That's when the counterclaim was filed. That's when we tendered the defense to Hartford. The law in Illinois is pretty clear. The duty to defend is broader than the duty to indemnify. If there's even a potential for coverage, there's a duty to defend. There is a duty to defend unless it is clear from the policy and in comparison to the allegations of the complaint that there is no such duty. If there is any potential for coverage, then the insurer has two courses of action to follow. It can either defend under a reservation of rights or it can seek a declaratory judgment. Here, Hartford did neither. The one thing that the Illinois Supreme Court cases that we cite in our brief indicate that the one thing you can't do is to do nothing. Hartford did nothing. The fact of the matter is that if Hartford really believed that it had no duty to defend because the person that filed the counterclaims against my client or the corporation, that was evident. That fact was evident from the very first allegation of the counterclaim. The very first allegation of the counterclaim says, CoinMac Inc. is a Delaware corporation licensed to do business in Illinois. How it was that it took Hartford, which didn't raise this defense until it filed its cross motion for for judgment on the pleadings in November or December of 2006 to decide that, yes, indeed, this is the reason we don't have to defend you is beyond me. Myriad, this California case, is not the law in Illinois. This parsing of the contract that they did there should not have been followed, I believe, by the district court. There are other reasons why the district court's opinion ought to be reversed. The district court, in Illinois, a term in an insurance policy is to be given its plain, ordinary meaning. The term person, as used in the Hartford policies, is not defined in the policies. Neither is the word organization, which is also part of their argument as to why, when you construe this contract, you must come to the conclusion that person means only a natural person. We cited in our brief to the district court, we cited to this court, three dictionary definitions, Black's, Oxford's, and Webster's, all of which indicate that person, a primary definition of the person includes not only human beings, but also corporations. Admittedly, there are certain offenses covered by the personal injury coverage and personal injury and advertising injury provisions of these policies, which could only arise in the context of a human being being involved. But an eviction is not one of them. Corporations can be evicted. We also pointed out the differences in the language of the wrongful eviction definitions that appear in both the umbrella policy and the GCL policy. The district court was under the mistaken belief that those definitions were the same. They're not. If you look at those definitions, it's clear that there is, at best, ambiguity in determining who claims brought under those provisions would apply to. There was case law in existence at the time we made the tender in which other courts construing very similar provisions found those provisions to be ambiguous and thus held that there was coverage and was a duty to defend under the contracts, under the insurance contracts. So for all of those reasons, we would ask that the district court opinion be reversed. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Gorman. Mr. Goldwater?
Good morning, Your Honors. Jeffrey Goldwater for Hartford. Your Honor, the issue is not whether in some theoretical circumstance a person can include a corporation. The issue is here in the context of this policy and this complaint, whether an organization, corporation, CoinMock Corporation, can be deemed, reasonably be deemed in the construction of this policy to be a person.
And when you look at the policy, when the policy specifically intends for a provision to refer to a natural person, it uses the term natural person. So why should the use of the term person be limited to just natural person? Because person is used there and natural person. So when natural person is used, that's very specific.
Well, several responses to that, Your Honor. One, the term natural person is not found in the primary commercial general liability policy. It's found in one provision only of the umbrella policy, which clearly does not apply because the umbrella policy has an exclusion which specifically says if there's no personal injury coverage in the primary, there's no personal injury coverage under the umbrella. So the umbrella policy clearly does not apply unless and to the extent the primary policy
except
applies.
Except that the drafters is the same drafters, and certainly they know what a natural person is. So we can certainly look at that. I understand they're separate policies, but we can certainly look at that to help deduce what the meaning is. Are you saying we can't or we shouldn't?
I'm saying it would be inappropriate under the rules of construction to construe a separate contract with a separate premium based on a separate policy. There's no case that says you can construe a one policy because of the same insurance company issued another policy, which is an umbrella policy, which covers different risks based on different and varied underlying policies. So I think under contract rules, it would be inappropriate to refer to the umbrella to try and interpret or create an ambiguity in a primary policy. But leaving that aside, I don't think it creates an ambiguity. If you look at the, instead of taking one phrase or one word out of each of the policy and trying to come up with an ambiguity, if you construe these policies, both of them together as a whole, I think the whether natural person is used or person, I think mean the same thing. Simply because you use in one place an adjective to modify a noun doesn't mean every time you don't use that adjective that the noun takes on a different meaning. If you use the phrase human people, and you're obviously talking about people being multiple persons, and then in the next sentence you say people, not you use the word human, that doesn't mean you mean that people suddenly mean something other than multiple persons. Here, if you look at this policy, the policy is obviously carefully constructed to distinguish between organizations, corporations, and persons, human beings. I mean, 16 times in this policy, the policy uses the phrase person or organization. 4 times it uses organization in isolation, and 14 times it uses the phrase person. And every other time it uses the phrase person, person can only mean human being because of the context. There's no way it can mean a corporation.
Yeah, but, I mean, isn't that what ambiguity is about? I mean, that's certainly your view, that in no way it could mean that. But doesn't it leave room for interpretation?
It leaves room for policy construction. I mean, I submit that every word in a policy or contract doesn't have to be defined in order to avoid ambiguity. I mean, a policy would be, if you define term after term after term, it would be thousands of pages. The issue is, based on a construction of the policy as a whole and all of the terms, is the meaning reasonably clear? And we submit that when you look at the context of this policy, person means human being. I mean, if you look at the wrongful eviction offense, uses person. The very next offense, D, talks about libel or disparagement of a person or organization. Obviously, why would you say in the libel offense, person or organization, if person includes corporation? The very next offense...
Does corporation... the organization always mean only corporation?
No, an organization would mean could mean a partnership, a municipality, something other than
a
human
broader,
being.
Much broader term.
No, absolutely, Your Honor.
And I guess in the case of person, person... could in some context include corporation, but not something else, could it, other than an individual? It couldn't. Could person include a partnership or some other type of an entity other than a corporation that runs a business?
In theory, in other contexts, it certainly could. I mean, variously in statutes that have been cited, person is defined to include organization or corporation. But the issue here is, does that make sense in the context of this policy, where every place the word person is used, it clearly must mean an individual person. I mean, the very next offense is oral or written publication of material that violates a person's right of privacy. Again, organizations, corporations don't have rights of privacy, so obviously it can and does only refer to a human being. Everywhere else you see person, bodily injury to a person, medical expenses of a person. Everywhere, 13 times where you see the word person, it can't refer to a partnership, an organization, or a corporation. It can only refer to a human being. And that's why the policy uses person or organization and distinguishes between the two. In some places you have person, some places you have organization, in some places it refers to person or organization.
Well, you agree that a corporation can be evicted from a premises just like a person.
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, the issue here is the policy, is, as I said, there are certain circumstances where the policy specifically intends to cover a claimant or an offense committed against a corporation. D, the next offense, libel or disparagement of a person or organization. So clearly we cover disparagement or libel of a corporation. But the next offense, oral or written publication material that violates a person's right of privacy, does not extend to a corporation, both because it doesn't use the word organization and because there is no right of privacy of an organization. I mean, construing that then consistently, the wrongful eviction offense would be the wrongful eviction of a person or organization. Why would you say that in the disparagement offense right below it, but leave out organization in the wrongful eviction offense? The intent here is to provide narrower coverage and avoid commercial disputes and provide limited coverage for a landlord-tenant situation where the tenant is an individual, and obviously That's a much narrower risk than the whole host of commercial contract disputes, which can arise from commercial corporate transactions. So we submit in the context of this policy, person means human being, and that's reasonably clear, as the district court found. I mean, I think that's also consistent with another rule of construction, is that you apply the usual plain and popular meaning of the term, that is sort of the man or woman on the street. I mean, I don't think anyone would, when you talk about CoinMock Corporation, you would think of them as a person. I mean, you don't say, oh, that CoinMock Corporation is a bad person because it's contesting Supreme's right to use the laundry facilities. I mean, you don't say, you know, Acme Corporation because it contributes to charity is a good person. Sure, person can in statutes because of legislative history or contracts because of definition be deemed to include something other than a human being, but I would submit that that's not the natural and ordinary construction of the term.
But when we look at this personal and advertising injury and definition, it says it means injury including consequential bodily injury arising out of one or more of the following offenses, and then it talks about wrongful eviction from, wrongful entry or invasion of a right of private occupancy of a room, dwelling, or premises that a person occupies committed by or on behalf of its owner, landlord, or lessor. Couldn't that refer to the corporation? Its, why is its in there?
Well, because it's limiting it to the wrongful eviction offense, the landlord-tenant situation, so that the interference or eviction has to be by the owner or landlord of the premises. So its clearly refers to the evictor having to be the owner, landlord, or lessor of the dwelling or premises. I mean, it makes no sense to construe it as referring to the person, because person certainly includes at least a human being, and its owner would then, you'd have to refer to a person's owner. I mean, obviously, human beings don't have owners, so I don't think it makes any sense, frankly, to construe the its to refer to person rather than the room, dwelling, or premises. Again, particularly in the context of this policy, where even in the definition of personal advertising injury, there's a clear distinction between which offenses apply to persons and which apply to persons or organizations. I mean, why? It makes no sense that if you intended to cover eviction of corporations, organizations, you would not say person or organization in the wrongful eviction offense, when in the very next offense you specifically say libel or disparagement of a person or organization. I mean, obviously the implication, logical, is you left out organization from the wrongful eviction offense because you don't intend to cover that.
Would you ever look at the primary policy and the umbrella policy together in the contract interpretation? Is that your position? You would never look to the umbrella to interpret the primary? Is that Goldwater, your position? Mm-hmm. Because we've got these policies.
Yes, except to the extent they refer to or interact with each other. They're
in the context of the same insured, mm-hmm. same period of time, same coverage. Even there?
I would say there are still different transactions with different contracts with different premiums, and there is no case that uses a separate policy, even issued to the same insured, to interpret another policy.
And that gets back to my point. Same drafter. I mean, so your answer to Judge Flom's question is yes. You don't think it should be, we shouldn't look to the umbrella at all.
The answer is yes. I don't think you should look to the umbrella at all. But again, I don't think, even if you did look to the umbrella, I don't think that creates an ambiguity. The umbrella is structured the same way. The fact that in one offense, which is not the wrongful eviction offense, they talk about discrimination or humiliation, against a natural person, I think the intent there was that a corporation could suffer discrimination, and they wanted to make it crystal clear that that means human being. Now, the fact that you make something crystal clear in one place and use an adjective doesn't mean suddenly, where it's otherwise clear in context, that the word person without the adjective suddenly means something else. In a policy where you use person repeatedly as distinct from organization, and person can almost always only mean human being.
Well, but so when one reads the wrongful eviction language in both policies, let's say the night after you signed it, and one speaks of committed on behalf of its owner, and then that's the primary policy, and then in the umbrella policy, on behalf of his or her owner, that shouldn't cause you any concern as to an understanding of coverage?
I don't think so, because they're functionally the same thing. One, they both speak to the relationship that it's a landlord-tenant relationship. One addresses in that requirement by referring to the property, its owner, and the other refers to it by using his or her, referring to the person's landlord. So obviously in the umbrella is actually even clearer. The wrongful eviction offense obviously only applies to human beings, because eviction by his or her, I mean, his or her obviously does refer to person, and his or her obviously cannot ever be a corporation. So if you read the umbrella policy, it's frankly clearer that wrongful eviction offense is limited to human beings than is the primary policy. So I don't see where you would ever be able to look at the umbrella policy and say, suddenly, well, I didn't expect that the primary would apply to primary. The primary policy would apply to human beings, but now that I've read the umbrella, I reasonably believe it does, when the umbrella policy is even clearer that it doesn't apply to corporations or organizations, because it uses the phrase him or her instead of its.
But, of course, you agree that there are very many clauses with the primary and the umbrella that talk together, that deal with the same point, that cover the same areas. So you do have to read both of them in context, don't you? Because there are references back and forth in other provisions.
There are references that they're like the exclusion to say only to the extent there's coverage under the primary is there coverage under the umbrella. The umbrella, though, never incorporates or adopts any of the language from the primary policy. It basically just says we provide umbrella coverage over multiple underlying policies, one of which is this policy. As the personal injury, exclusion 4 says there's no umbrella coverage for personal injury, despite how we define it, unless there's personal injury coverage under the primary policy. So it does speak to there being a requirement of coverage, but it doesn't incorporate or bring in the terms of the umbrella into the primary or vice versa.
Where you say that the umbrella policy is even clearer, sort of reflects on the underlying policy, that it could have been clearer if it was written the same as the umbrella. Is that what you're implying by making that claim?
Well, I'm saying, obviously, in retrospect, had they defined person as human being, we wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm. But you use the term crystal clear. To speak
right.
To
well,
Judge
if,
you,
if they
point.
Defined it as human being, it would be crystal clear. But it's crystal clear. I mean, policy interpretation is an art, not a science, and I don't think you can reasonably define every term. The issue is, in the context of this policy, using common sense and the rules of policy construction, which are generally based on common sense, construing this together, can you reasonably believe that person means something other than the usual and ordinary meaning, which is human being? And we submit that the answer is no. And briefly, in my time left, I'd just like to address the arguments on waiver. Well, there goes my time.
Well, you may make a concluding
remark. All right, very briefly, Your Honor. First of all, we have a motion to strike. If we're addressing, I'm not sure what the argument is. Yes, in the initial denial letters, Hartford consistently denied there was coverage, refused to defend. That's their position today. They specifically said this does not fall within the wrongful eviction defense. They did not raise the issue or case law of natural person, but we contend that's irrelevant. I mean, under Illinois law, you don't waive. We raise the specific defense, not the specific reason for it, and waiver clearly doesn't apply. There's no estoppel. We denied. There's no allegation of reliance. And the hold doesn't apply because it's not in litigation. It's not inconsistent with anything Hartford did. It's just asserting an additional reason. Plus, we have a motion to strike that wasn't raised in the other brief.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Goldwater. Mr. Gorman?
Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, if it's not crystal clear, and if it's not clear, then under Illinois law, they either had to bring in a declaratory judgment action to determine whether or not they had a duty to defend, or they had to defend us under a reservation of rights, and they didn't do either one of those things. That's the law. That's the law in Illinois. That's the Elko decision and all of the Supreme Court cases that we cited. The fact that the same drafter of the two policies that were issued at the same time to the same client, one policy obviously doesn't even come into existence, the umbrella policy, unless there is underlying coverage, which is the commercial general liability policy. In those two policies, they use the term, the specific term, natural person. A counsel would have you believe, well, that doesn't make any difference, it's just one time.
Well, it does make a difference. And when you look at these two definitions and you compare them, the words his and her refer to person. The words its refers to person. That's a proper construction, and there was case law that was in existence back in 2002 that found those that found the language of the general commercial liability policy ambiguous and held that those insurers in those cases had a duty to defend. Hartford ignores those cases. They rely on a California Supreme case court, or a California Ninth Circuit case decided years later. That's not fair. That's not right. They had a duty to defend us. The case should be reversed. The case should be remanded for determination of damages and reinstitution of count three. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Gorman. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.